extreme picky eaters, that's anxiety. And I have a kid who also fell off the growth chart. So I understand this anxiety deeply, and it's really intense. And it's scary when your kid isn't eating enough, right? But what I found is the only way to actually stop that is to stop pressuring the kid, which means temporarily they are not going to eat, which is a very scary place. And it's really hard. But unless you go through that, you can't get to the place where they start eating more.
And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Parenting Leadership and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to people who can help you on your parenting, teaching, and leadership journey. Today, I have for you a celebrity in the house. Anyone with over a million followers is a celebrity in my book. Her name is Jennifer, but you may know her as Kids Eat in Color. I'm going to have her introduce herself and tell you guys a little bit about her.
Hey everybody, my name is Jennifer. I'm a registered dietitian. I'm a mom of two exciting boys and the cheerleader to millions of parents who are feeding kids every day, day in and day out. So I'm thrilled to be here and I'm honored that I could be part of this.
Well, we are honored to have you. So as per usual, just gonna jump right into it. I had three questions that I planned on asking, but actually, last second, had another thing that I want to talk to you about that I saw on your page, which I'd like for you to plug a little bit later. What is this about, you know, metals and baby food? And can you help us tell us a little bit about it, what the study says? Can you help us make sense of it? Talk to us, Jennifer.
Sure. So let's start with the basics. So food grows in the ground. We all know that. Heavy metals are in the ground. So all the food that we eat has heavy metals in it. Some food has more than others. Water has arsenic in it. Water is actually the primary way that people are exposed to arsenic. You know, all sorts of heavy metals and cadmium. So these are all things that we don't want to be eating or we don't want to be exposed to. You know, they can make us really sick. But also, there's this baseline of heavy metals that are just in our environment. Now, why is this even something people are talking about right now? Well, in the news, there was this recent explosion of interest in heavy metals, specifically in processed baby foods. The reason is a couple years ago, 2019, I believe, there was a report that came out. A bunch of organizations really wanted to bring attention to the fact that baby food does have high levels of things like arsenic, cadmium, lead, mercury in foods. The thing is, babies are very tiny, so we really don't want them to be exposed to very much. And what we know is in some of those processed baby foods, especially rice products, especially commonly consumed foods by kids, there's a lot of these heavy metals. And there was a congressional follow-up panel where they looked into this more, and Congress just sent out an update on a report. They issued a report talking about their findings, talking about the effects. Now, this report specifically looked at baby foods, processed baby foods by a certain number of baby food companies. They reached out to others who refused to participate in the study. And what they found was, some of the baby foods have really high levels of contaminants in them. And they didn't do a comparison of homemade versus pre-made baby foods. So we don't know for sure how much higher because we don't have that data available to us. But we know based on some aspects of the report that, it is likely that manufacturing and all this stuff adds heavy metal contaminants to the food. So it's something to be aware of. Now, of course, all parents everywhere that read this were absolutely flipping out. Like, oh my gosh, I've poisoned my baby. I encourage us really to not think like that. it, for us living in fear doesn't actually help us parent our kids better, and it doesn't help us do better, and it is more just exhausting to us. So I recommend kind of looking at the facts, and I do talk about the history of this, when we found out about it, different things you can do, whether or not the recommendations have changed. I talk about that in my full article about it at kidsyncolor.com. But the basic is, like, serve your child the widest variety of foods that you have access to. So if you have access to 25 different vegetables, then serve all of those over time. If your culture is based on rice, find ways to reduce the arsenic concentration of foods and don't add unnecessary rice products. So do we need to be feeding babies rice cereal? We actually don't, and it's probably better if we don't. There's our alternatives, there's oats, there's barley, and there's just, you know, foods other than those rice cereal or grain cereals. So we can really come at this that in a way that's not fear-based, but that's also not ignoring it altogether. Yes, it's a concern. Yes, people are working on it. Yes, if you are angry, go send emails to those companies, you know, ask for more transparency, ask for the data, like all that stuff, but also, or don't buy it, you know, don't vote with your dollars, but also don't stop feeding your child. Because the fastest way to hurt your child's health is to stop feeding them food. And all foods are going to have these heavy metals. So we have to keep that in mind. Like, all foods are going to have some of this. We can't be like, oh my gosh, they're poisoning us. Like, it's much more complicated than that. But we can focus on variety and reducing the exposure to rice.
Yeah. So, okay. So rice is one of the ones that we should be just aware of, not necessarily stop all rice consumption, but just,
No.
Just be aware of it and don't overdo it on the rice. Are there any, you know, what are the foods that we should maybe move towards that maybe we should be, that we should be adding to our diet?
Right. So, you know, anything, I am a big believer that all foods are helpful. So it doesn't matter what your culture is. It doesn't matter where you live. Whatever foods you have access to and whatever foods are important to you, those we can start feeding to our kids. Now, obviously, the less processed, kind of the better. But we always need to keep in mind that not everybody has access to unprocessed foods. So if that's you, that's fine, too. You know, if you have access to whatever foods are in your environment that you have access to, the wider the variety, the better. I'm sorry. Do you hear a violin? Do you hear violin music?
I don't hear it at all.
Oh, you don't? Okay. I'm sorry. There is a, I rent a very tiny basement apartment in our neighborhood to work out of, and there is a violin lesson going on above me. So if that becomes distracting, I can mess with the headphones and see if we can get that.
No, that's you're completely fine. I don't hear it at all.
Okay, wonderful. yeah, so, you know, and obviously the more fruits and vegetables, the more whole grains, the more different sorts of proteins, the bigger variety, the better, based on what we have access to.
Okay. All right, so that makes a lot of sense. But now, so let's get into the meat and potatoes of the children conversation of just, okay, so let's say we do have access to a variety of different foods. How do we get our children to eat them? You know, if children are picky or they're refusing to eat, you know, the variety of foods that we are providing for them, one, what are some habits that we tend to have that you probably see a lot that we should stop doing? And what are some habits that you don't see as often that we should start doing?
Yeah, so one of those really common things that I see is, as parents, we care about our kids, we care about their health, we care about whether they're eating enough, what we think is eating enough. And we believe that we know how much our child needs to eat. Problem with that is, you're actually not in your child's body. So the problem is, you actually don't know if they're hungry or not. And sure, there's a lot of signs, and you know, I'm a mom of two boys, and I definitely understand. Yet sometimes you're like, you just need some food, and that would solve a lot of problems that we're having right now. But other times, we think, oh my gosh, they're being picky, or oh my gosh, they're not eating dinner. That's a problem. I need to push them. I need to push them to eat. And I think they need a big dinner. And I'm going to push them to eat. Dinner is so important. Dinner is the meal where I serve the vegetables. So I want them eating. So we start pressuring our kids. Take a bite. That's good for you. Two more bites and then you can get down, right? What we don't realize is when we're doing these things, and you know, we all come by it, honestly, I think most of our parents employed these tactics. You know, my parents had a really strong one bite rule. It didn't matter what it was. Didn't matter if you were throwing up, you had to take a bite of something. A lot of parents, you had to finish your plate to get down. These things, you know, we don't have to feel bad that this is what instinctually comes to us, because this is how we were taught. This is how we were raised. And it's inside of us, right? But what we know is that when kids are pressured to eat, they begin to listen to what you say as kind of, they begin to listen outside of themselves for what their body needs. Like, oh, well, she says I have to eat three bites to get down, so I'll just do whatever she says, but I'm actually going to like this food less. You know, this cup of milk here, I remember sitting at the table as a kid. My dad was like, you can't drink anything until you take a sip of that milk. So I did not take a sip of anything for the entire meal because milk was vile. In fact, I felt sick when I drank milk. To this day, I will not take a sip of milk. You couldn't pay me. And we know when kids are forced to eat things as a child, they are less likely to like them intrinsically, meaning inside themselves, they like the food less. And then additionally, I mean, there are studies that actually show kids who were forced to eat something as a child will not eat it as an adult. And I tell you, I will not drink that milk. It doesn't matter how much you offer me. It doesn't matter what you pay me. It doesn't, nothing matters. I have to be dying before I will drink milk.
Yeah.
It's the same for kids.
Yeah.
So while we have all of the best intentions coming to our child saying, you know, you just have to eat it. You just have to eat it. You just have to eat it. We actually work against ourselves. They're less likely to eat it. They're less likely to eat the right amount for their body. They're less likely to want that food for themselves, which all the things we really, truly want. We want our kid to eat the right amount for their body. We want our kid to eat a balanced diet. We want our kid to eat, quote, healthy foods. And I don't really like that word, but I'm gonna use it. And we want our kids to fill up and all these things. But the more we pressure them, the less likely that is to happen long-term.
Hmm. Okay, so don't pressure them. Provide a variety of different foods for them to try and to eat. But what if we've already gone past that point where we've already instinctually, like you said, the way that we grew up, you know, take just one bite, take a no thank you bite, or you can't have your XYZ, or you can't have seconds. You're already in the habit. We've already created a monster, and the child is now so focused, you know, doesn't listen to what their body says as much, and they listen to more what we are saying, and they're pushing against it. And they've now decided that they don't like milk or, you know, peas or whatever it is, because it is a little, it's the pushback against us pushing it, forcing it, imposing it on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you find yourself in this situation, I just want to start by saying you are not alone. There are millions and trillions, I mean, trillions probably, but like millions of parents who are in the exact same boat, and they're coming to mealtime, they're crying, they're feeling defeated, they're frustrated. I mean, I have parents join my Better Bites program who are just, they're pulling their hair out. They are so stressed. It's the worst part of the day. And what makes it so bad is you're feeding your kid, you know, 5-6 times a day, sometimes more or less. But I mean, this is something, this stress is happening day in, day out, all day long, and you feel like you can't get away from it. I always recommend that you step back and kind of remember what's your job as a parent, what's your kid's job, because you can actually fix this. You can end your stress. at mealtimes. You don't have to keep being stressed out. When you know what your job is, so as a parent, it's my job to provide meals for my child. It's not my job to let them make the menu. That's not their job. It's my job to make the menu. How could they possibly know what they need? They're two, they're four, they're seven. Even my seven-year-old, who's starting to figure things out, makes very dubious meal choices. You know, when he wakes up at 5 a.m, he's like, oh, I'm gonna get myself a snack, and he finds some lollipops. He eats lollipops for breakfast. You know, not my first choice for him.
Yeah.
They don't really know what they need, and that's fine. That's not their job. As a parent, it's my job to know, to be able to, I mean, I know my food budget. I know what food I have access to. I know a little bit about nutrition. Obviously, I'm an expert, so like I know more than I want to know about nutrition. But like the average parent is coming, they're like, yeah, I know the basics, right? And so you're the parent. You can own that. Like, it's my job to serve the meals, and that is a big job. And then it's also my job as a parent to create a kind of eating environment. And what I mean by that is you have a place that you eat. Now, it could be a picnic blanket on the floor if you don't have a table. It could be the kitchen table. It could be maybe you have someplace in the kitchen. Like in my house, we eat at the table or we eat in the kitchen. Those are the two places that we eat. And when we eat, you know, 99% of the time, we're not eating with a screen. We're not eating with lots of toys or distractions. Like, I want my kids to like be able to focus on what their body is telling them and the food, right? So I don't want them watching TV during a meal. And there's all sorts of other benefits that come with not watching a screen during the meal. But really, I mean, let's talk about the stress. It's just, I need them to learn to eat what their body needs. And it's key for picky eating to kind of reduce that screen time during the meals. And then, so I'm gonna, like, we have a place where we eat. They're not just like running around the house eating everywhere, which is common, and no reason to beat yourself up for that. That is like a totally common thing too. We can bring them back to the table. It makes eating a little more formal, right? And yes, there may be some tantrums, and I know you were talking about tantrums earlier. There are gonna be some tantrums when you're like, sorry, I can't eat in the front of the TV in the living room anymore. You gotta eat in the kitchen, sitting on the floor, or sitting at the table, or whatever you got. And they're gonna have some feelings about that. And that's fine, you know, but you're the parent. You can establish that structure. And then the third part is you are going to decide, you know, you're going to establish a routine or a schedule. Now, some people are like, oh my gosh, schedules aren't for me. That's fine. But my guess is you have a routine. Like, you wake up and your kids eat a meal in the morning, and then they eat a meal midday, and then they eat a meal in the evening. At least in the United States, we tend to have this three meal structure. And then we also have, you know, 1 to 3 snacks for the kids, you know, and maybe adults too, right?
Yeah.
So we have our structure. Now, if that's by the schedule, that's fine for you. If it's more of a routine, a flow, that's fine too. But you have to have a formal structure, right? We come to the eating place, we have the food that was provided by the parents as an option, and we have our formal snack. And the reason I like to use formal is because it's not just like, oh, here's some pretzels, here's a handful of pretzels, and they go run around the house and they eat them and they leave the crumbs and, you know, all that. But it's formal. Like, as the parent, I'm like, you know what? It's going to be a snack, but it's going to be a balanced snack, which means I'm going to give you some pretzels, but I'm also going to give you a little cup of peanut butter and maybe an apple, right? Still simple. I didn't put a ton of time into it, but it's going to give them enough fuel to get to the next meal or snack. Now, I know you're like, but I just asked, like, how do you get the kids to actually eat? The thing is, it's never my job to force my kid to eat something. It's never my job to actually determine what they're going to eat or what they're not. But I do have a huge job. My job is like the whole environment, the whole structure. And that's a big job for me. And then my kid comes along. They're not actually in charge of running the show around here. Like, I'm in charge of the show, but I have no control over their body. That's their job. And when I can make that distinction, like, hey, I got a big job, I did it. And when I do it, like, I'm going to pound myself on the back. Good job. That was a hard job. I just like made a balanced snack. I created an eating opportunity. I like did the whole thing. Now my kid comes and I say, you know what? My job is done. I got my win. Now it's your job to decide whether you're going to eat and how much. Mm. And that is where we get confused. And when we battle against that and we're like, but it's my job to decide how much my child eats, then let me guarantee you, that is a recipe for stress. And when you can really step back and say, okay, that's their job. That is their job. And I'm not going to get involved in how many bites they eat. I guarantee you, after your initial adjustment, where your child has like finally realized, oh, she's serious. She's not going to let me eat the carrots wherever, or the pretzels or whatever. She's not going to actually give me pretzels every time I ask either. That's going to be a hard transition. And that's going to take a couple weeks. But when you get past that hump, on the other side is this really strong, respectful place of, hey, mom's providing these foods, or dad, right? I say mom because, you know, I'm the mom, but and I don't have to eat any of it if I don't want it. I don't have to eat any of it. I don't have to eat any of those bell peppers. And when kids realize that they do not ever have to eat any of those bell peppers, and you don't care, or at least they think you don't care, it opens up a new world to a child actually eating foods and trying foods. And I just always have to add this one thing. As a parent, it's your job to be kind. Always, always serve at least one food that you know your child feels very comfortable and safe with. And make sure they are allowed to eat that, even if that's the only thing that they eat. Like one of my kids loves milk. Kid could live on milk. There's some meals that I might serve that I know are gonna be a real struggle for him, because he struggles with selective eating, right? So I put a milk there, and I know that worst comes to worst, he can drink milk until he's full and he'll be okay. But having that safe food there for him gives him the courage and the security to know, yeah, maybe I should try some chili too, even though it's a mixed food. And that's kind of scary to me.
You know what? As I'm hearing you talk, and you're talking about your job is to create the environment, it reminds me very much of Montessori, the Montessori philosophy of just, you know, in Montessori, we, you know, that's very much philosophy too. We are the guide on the side, not the sage on the stage. We are the observer. Our job is to create the environment. I would tell other teachers who weren't a part of, when I would train Montessori teachers, but also when teachers were trying to understand, learn more about Montessori, I would refer to the environment as like the second or third teacher in the room. It has its own job. My job is to prepare it and kind of and really do hands off, right? And even, you know, you were talking about there are going to, you know, there are going to be things that they're automatically going to go to that, you know, as you prepare their environment, that they're going to be very easily engaged. But there are going to be some other things that they're not as familiar with that might be intentionally next to the thing that is, you know, super desirable that they're always going to play with. And it's my job to be very intentional about it so that they very naturally, as they are, maybe they're really into, maybe in the back of my mind, I really want them to practice their, you know, fine motor development, but they are, you know, but I know they're really into, you know, pouring. They're really into pouring. I mean, there's fine motor development there too, but I really want them to focus on, like, I might intentionally put the scooping next to the pouring and don't say anything, because if I do, I may at the most go in and do a little bit of scooping myself. I'll introduce it, I'll show them, I will model using it and then put it away, no pressure. And inevitably, 80% success in that time, in that moment, or in, like, at least in that day, they are going to go to that, and they're going to be curious, like, it's good enough for him to try, then I guess it might be good enough for me. And he's not pushing this on me, so, you know, communicating that it's something worth doing.
Yeah,
it's worth doing. And so especially me being the person they look up to, who we have a good relationship with. It's something that they, in their mind, like, maybe something that would be worth me doing as well. And then they take that tray out and they explore it. It sounds like you're doing something, you know, very similar.
Yeah.
Am I off target?
No, you are, like, you're 1,000 times on target. I like what you said about the activities too, because that is really how we engage kids in eating more foods without pressure. So in my Better Bites program, you know, we talk about, and this is the program for picky eaters or the families of picky eaters, we talk about how do you manipulate the environment to build that intrinsic desire. And I use the word intrinsic, it's kind of like, you know, wonky, but it's like the inside, like how do you make your kid actually want to eat broccoli? Because yeah, you can force your kids to eat broccoli. You can praise them and you can bribe them. All this stuff, quote, works. But then what happens when they grow up? Are they actually going to choose broccoli then when you're not bribing them and when you're not doing those things? And the research suggests that they have a decreased intrinsic desire to eat those foods when they were forced and bribed and things like that. So my goal is more of the long road. Like, yeah, my kids might not eat as much broccoli right now. But when I bring in, like you were saying, those things that I know that they like, those developmental things that they're super into, when I make a little bowl of broccoli and I put that scoop in, like you were saying, they're super into pouring. And I say, hey, can you pour all these broccoli pieces into this blender for me, or this pot of soup, or can you sprinkle some of that broccoli on my soup? You know, not that I sprinkle broccoli on soup, but you know, if I were, we put like broccoli sprinkles on pizza, which is just like the little kind of shredded broccoli. Suddenly, you just intrigue them in a way that they are like right there. And as your parent, as the parent, you kind of know what your kid thinks is funny. You know what they're into. You know what they want to learn how to do right now. And you can turn that into food play at the table. So, we eat, I really enjoy broccoli and I serve it quite a bit. And it's a great, as far as nutrition goes, it's just a great food for kids, but it's not the only food. And it's also funny, like it looks kind of funny. And I find kids can get into that. So one of my kids, no problem, eat broccoli. Second kid comes along, he's skeptical of like all foods. So we play this game. What color is the broccoli in your tree? Or sorry, what color is the birdie in your tree? And my son, I think we made it up. Maybe he was like 18 months, around the time that kids can start imagining things. And he doesn't want to eat his broccoli. That's fine. I say, oh, what color is the birdie in your tree? And I guess it started with, is there a birdie in your tree? He was 18 months, so color was a little not for him, but is there a birdie in your tree? And then, you know, one of the parents was like, tweet, tweet, tweet. Ooh, I hear a song. Where is that coming from? And we're looking, and then we see a birdie in his tree, which he thinks is hilarious. Oh my gosh, there's a birdie in his tree. He looks, he gets it closer to him. He's interacting with the broccoli. Next thing you know, he takes a bite and he says, I ate the birdie in my tree. Which of course is hilarious to an 18-month-old, and his brother, who's, you know, 3 and a half, thinks it's absolutely hilarious. And everybody's laughing. Everybody's eating broccoli. We are still playing that game. The kids are 5 and a half and 7 and a half. They asked to play that game, except it's morphed into what color is the birdie in my tree? And now that they're learning different types of animals, it's what is the birdie in my tree? Which turns into this huge guessing game with like us. Meanwhile, they're eating their broccoli, right? But these games that we play at the table, they build connection with the kids. They build social skills, they build verbal skills, and they also get the kids interacting with food in a no pressure way that they enjoy. And it really, really, really gets them eating more foods with no pressure. Now, and I'm not saying no work.
Yeah.
As parents, you know, it's this never ending, like, oh, what game can I play to do this? What game can I play to do that? Right. But at least it's this positive experience around something. And my kids are growing up enjoying broccoli on their own. And it's a source of connection and fun for them. So when they grow up, I hope they're like, you know, I hope they're not the kid who's like, ah, well, I would never eat broccoli. It's like, why would they say that? You know?
Because, I mean, it sounds like you are creating an association with broccoli and fun and connection and good, as opposed to, you know, where a lot of kind of the traditional methods of forcing, like, you need to eat this or else, that doesn't create a good feeling. That doesn't create connection. That creates, you know, that creates disconnection. That creates like, oh, like, I really hate this. Like, now I have to double down on how much I hate this so that they know and understand that, like, I will not eat this. I do not like this, in hopes that maybe one day they'll, you know, listen to us. But what you're doing, it is like, let's have, you know, fun. Let's enjoy. Let's find other ways to explore and enjoy, you know, the food. And so I would also like to know, that kind of brings me to another question about, like, playing with their food. What are your thoughts about them playing with their food? You know, I see it all the time. I hear it all the time with teachers. You know, stop playing with your food. You need to finish eating. What are your thoughts on children playing with their food?
So first of all, I get it. It's messy. There's a lot of things that go into it. We'd rather see the kids eating. What we don't realize, and it makes perfect sense because who would have ever told us this, but the sensory system, our ability to, like, interact, or touch, feel, taste, you know, all the senses, each kid's sensory system is a little different, and their ability to interact with their senses is a little bit different. And so a lot of picky kids that we just call picky, and picky, I've noticed, is often used as, like, a term for it's almost like they chose not to eat that food just to be, like, annoying or something. But what we don't realize is kids don't eat a food usually for a reason. And the reason is not to annoy you. The reason is it looks funny. It smells funny. For some kids, their experience of senses is, like, big. Right? So I taste broccoli and it tastes like level one. They taste broccoli and it tastes like level 10. And that is way too overwhelming. And they just cannot get over that. Or I don't know if you've ever had experience of coming across a food that makes you feel a little anxious or scared, right? Where you look at it and you're like, I saw something recently. I wish I could remember what it was. But I thought,
I'm thinking about chitlins right now. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm thinking about chitlins right now. And I remember growing up and then being cooked at my grandmother's house, and just the smell would just, like I really, and then even looking at them, and thank goodness, I think maybe one time they, like, wanted me, like, to try it, but it wasn't, like, a big thing. But I think the stars, the heavens, God, that it wasn't a thing in my household to, you know, force me to eat chitlins every other. Like, if I had to eat chitlins to eat any of my other food, then I would be that child too that just wouldn't eat. And then we would just be fighting until I, you know, right, got spoken, whatever would happen. But that's something that would, in terms of, like, overloading my senses, in terms of, like, smell and look and taste, would really get to me. And I don't know if that's exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly. You have put that into such a beautiful story. It's, like, perfect, right? Where you can actually remember it as an adult, just how vile that made your body feel. Like, disgust, right? So that's the experience of kids. So when they play with food, right? When they play with food, they're desensitizing their sensory system. They're wiping, you know, yogurt all over their face, but they feel that creaminess on their face, which is, you know, that's less intense than actually having that creaminess in their mouth, right? So we got to feel it on our hands. We got to feel it on our face. We got to eventually get it in our mouth. The more you let kids play with it, the better, right? And you know, with your example, you know, maybe it's good. I don't know if you eat them now, but if no, you don't, right? So some kids, some things, you know, they're just never going to carry over. But some things this, okay, first you're smelling it, then you're helping cook it, then maybe see some other people eat it on the table, and you become a little bit more comfortable. Then maybe you find some way to dip it in a sauce that you just absolutely love, and it actually isn't so bad. And then next thing you know, you're like, I don't know, maybe I could taste it without the sauce, or maybe I can't, but like, maybe I can, right? And so there's all these little changes that can occur to desensitize your sensory system, rather than just kind of like dumping you into a pan and being like, okay, now you have to take three bites and you're, you know, like, well, then I'm going to throw up and I'm going to starve myself to death.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point. So in the moment, no, I'm sure listening, learning more helps. Listening to this, you know, podcast helps, getting, you know, learning more and more information. But how do we really trust all this? Like, how do we bring down that anxiety in ourselves when our, you know, when a child is pushing back against eating something, or you know, we've been cooking fruits and vegetables, and we've been putting it out there, and they've just been eating the chicken nuggets, and then they've been good. And like, what do we do when it feels like nothing is quote unquote like working, or at least in the moment it's not working? Like, how do we bring down our anxiety to stick it through, to really trust? Because I can get why, like we were talking about extrinsic and intrinsic motivators, a lot of the reason why people use extrinsic motivators because it feels reinforcing when we use them, and in the moment they take that bite and then it's like, yes, I got them, I did it, like it works, I made them, I, you know, I threatened them, if they wouldn't eat the broccoli then X, Y, and Z, they ate the broccoli, this works.
Yeah.
And if I don't do that, then they won't eat the broccoli, and that proves that your strategy doesn't work. So like, how does, you know, how do we trust that? How do we bring down the anxiety? I get it. I trust you. I understand. But how do we do that within ourselves?
It's hard. It's hard because you're exactly right. There is that cycle that you are exactly describing. So and what we see with extreme picky eaters is this gets like really frustrating because the child isn't eating and maybe they're low weight and you're really concerned about their health. Right. So you say, okay, I'll force my kid to eat. Then they eat. And if I don't force them, they won't eat. But what you don't realize is you're creating that. Right. So, but the more you force them, the less they want to eat. So I describe it as like the pig eating cycle or the pressure cycle where the parent gets worried, understandably, forces the child to eat. The child wants to eat less. Then the parent says, well, I have to force you or you're not going to eat. So then the child wants to eat less, right? And every time you force the child to eat, they want to eat less. And then when you stop pressuring, they, of course, don't eat, right? And what I found, and I come across this so much in my Better Bites program, because it is like the parents and many families of like extreme picky eaters. That's anxiety. And I have a kid who also fell off the growth chart. So I understand this anxiety deeply, and it's really intense. And it's scary when your kid isn't eating enough, right? But what I found is the only way to actually stop that is to stop pressuring the kid, which means temporarily they are not gonna eat, which is a very scary place. And it's really hard. But unless you go through that, you can't get to the place where they start eating more to actually get to a better place. And so that's a really scary cycle. And if you have a kid who's like falling off the growth chart or something like that, you may need a professional to monitor their weight during that transition and that sort of thing. But I think a lot of it is kind of understanding that, yeah, there is gonna be this cycle going on. The more I pressure, the less my kid will eat. The more I have to pressure, right? That's just gonna go on. So if that's the world you wanna live in, then you're right, that is true. You have to pressure your child to get them to eat, but you're not going to be able to get out of that cycle. Mm-hmm. If you want to take a different way where that eventually is less stressful, but initially is really nerve-wracking. And you have to take that pressure out. And you have to start these other models, right? Now, what I like to tell parents is, you know, picky eating is super common. 70, 80% of parents will say their child shows signs of picky eating. There's not an official definition of picky eating. But what I like to ask parents is, what is this experience like for you? Are you pulling your hair out? Are you crying? Are you feeling so defeated? Is this something you refer to as World War III? Is your child losing foods? Like, they used to eat everything when they were a baby, super common. And then they turned one or two, also super common. And now they're not eating everything. They're super picky. That's kind of normal. And kids often in a no pressure environment, often like start to expand their food preferences over time. You know, is it something where they stop eating this for 3 weeks and then they add it back in? Well, that's normal. They stop eating this and then they don't ever add it back in. That's not as normal. That's more of a red flag. Like something might be going on. Is this one of these things where it's causing so much stress that now your marriage is suffering? That's not really normal. I hate even using the word normal because there's just so many things that people experience, but that's not what we call typical. You know, there might be an opportunity to learn some new techniques. So if you're finding that your child is losing foods, they're eating less than 20 foods, they're eating just 5 foods, if they're not touching their food, if you're observing more and more picky eating behaviors and they're stressing you out and it's becoming this huge thing, it's a great time to get more support. Whether you need like an actual feeding therapy where it's individualized, or whether you need a program like the one I teach, Better Bites, or whether you just need to kind of like start following somebody and kind of absorbing their free content. Like I have a free picky eater guide that's super useful and helps tons of parents. You know, you have to kind of feel out what is right for you. But if you're finding that the stress levels keep going up, then it's a good time to try something new. It might not be the perfect thing at first, but just saying, you know, I'm going to try some new things here can really make a big difference.
Okay, so completely off, this is my last question. And I asked on the side, doesn't seem like anyone else, the people that are in here, have any questions that they want to ask specifically. But this is completely shifting gears. What are your thoughts on how to, this might be a big question, on how to wean young children off of, from breastfeeding to bottles, from bottles to cups? What are your thoughts on that?
So I am of the opinion that you can do whatever you want. There are huge divides. Like, are you allowed to feed your baby purees? Is baby led weaning the best? Obviously, there's the formula and breast milk debates and like all these things. Here's what I think. When you're going from liquids to solids, you're going from breast milk or formula to solids. My method was what I call whatever you want weaning, or real easy weaning, where you're trying to get them to table food as quickly as possible. Because once you get them to table food, your job becomes easier in that you're cooking meals that you could serve to everyone in the house. I did not do baby-led weaning. I also didn't do kind of traditional puree feeding, whatever that is. Basically, it's like, okay, how can I get my kid to the table food as quickly as possible? My goal was like, how can I do that by about one? You know, they're like eating family food because I don't have time to be making special food for a baby. Like, I'm working full time. I got multiple kids. Like, you know, that was way too much work. I also had postpartum depression. This idea of baby-led weaning where I could never use a spoon and I could also like had to follow these rules and had to make special food that would be appropriate for the baby to grab. That did not work for me at all. Now, baby-led weaning, it's a great method for weaning, but it is not the only evidence-based way of weaning a child. And I think a lot of people are hearing, oh, baby-led weaning is this like, it's the best method and it's the blah, blah, blah. It's not the best method for every family. It's not the best method for every baby. It is a valid method and it is safe and healthy and all those things when you do it right. But it's also not your only option. So what I did is, yeah, I pureed some foods that were easiest for me to puree. I actually have an Instagram post coming up soon where I compare like baby pouches and then just a sweet potato that I put on center cook in the microwave and then mash with the fork. You can actually feed your baby just mashed sweet potato. It's so cheap. It's like, you know, 99 cents a pound, whereas the pouch food is like $7 or $12 a pound. Super cheap, super easy when I just cooked it in the microwave and I mashed it up with a fork and then boom, I can feed it. I could feed it to them with a spoon, or my kids were way too independent. They never let me feed them anything. So they fed themselves with a spoon. They can grab it. They can do whatever they need to with that sweet potato. Am I going to make special sweet potato fries that are for baby linguine and stick them in the oven and like do all that? That would never have worked for me. So, but getting them onto kind of like adult food or real person food, or I don't know, whatever you want to call it, is important. It's going to help them get the nutrients that they need and it's going to help them get what they want. I also absolutely loved having a baby food grinder. These are like, they used to be standard in every house. I don't know how they went out of like celebrity because they're so easy. They're just like these little hand grinders. You like stick the food in the top and then you grind it up. They're kind of old school, but you can make a meal for your family and then take part of it and grind it up for the baby. It's textured. It's not super pureed, which is great for, you know, desensitizing their system. They could smear it all over their face. Again, good for their system. They could also feed it to themselves with a spoon or whatever. But, and then they get exposed to all the flavors that you want them to get exposed to. And also you didn't have to make them like a special baby led weaning muffin or something, you know, it's just right there. My husband loved it. I mean, we would stick the grinder in the diaper bag and anywhere we went, we could just feed them whatever food was available, add a little liquid. It's just super convenient. Yeah. And it kind of bridges that space between, I also wasn't making like gourmet purees, which is something people get really into and they're like, freeze all the baby food in the little ice cube trays. I mean, I love it. If you're super into weaning, that's awesome. Whatever you do. But also, if you're someone like me who's like, I don't have time for that. Like, I just need the baby eating food. How do I get them there as fast as possible? That was how I did it. Just grind up whatever everybody else is eating. Could you grind up a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Probably I did. And so anyway, you can grind up a salad. You can put a little salad dressing on it. There's all sorts of things that you can do with a baby food grinder if you're lazy enough, like we were.
And, you know what? Ground up PB&J does not sound that bad. If you get the ratio right, I don't know why they're not selling. You know, they should sell like little, and maybe they already do, but like, just like little like PB&J balls, like ground it up. And I would totally eat those.
Exactly. There's so many things you can feed to your baby, wherever they are. And then, you know, as soon as the kids, like, I just thought of like purees as like a very short part. Like you want your kid to go down the road to eating food that you don't have to grind up because it's a pain, right? So how do I get them there as fast as possible? And that's like watching them closely. Okay, they did the purees. Well, okay, now I'm going to give them some texture purees. And purees lasted all of like, you know, a couple weeks. And then I get them to eating something that's a little more lumpy and bumpy and ground up, easier for me. And then I'm giving them some smashed beans that were out of my taco mixture. And now I'm giving them this. And I mean, my kids ate a lot of Chipotle when they were weaning because they have the beans. You could just take the bean out, cut it in half, give it to the baby. Now it's got a little sodium in it, which is not maybe ideal for the babies. But, you know, again, for people who are not 100% excited about weaning foods, like, I'm sorry. I was like, how can I get through the next 6 months? Right. Yeah, I'm going to feed my baby a little bit of Chipotle.
I love your approach. I love the practicality of it. And I love how you not only gave, you know, you gave a lot of recommendations that are very accessible to anyone, you know, no matter what the budget. And that's one of the things I really do like about your page too. So thanks for coming on, Jennifer. So glad we had the opportunity to talk. Is there any last things that you'd like to say to the audience? Where I know you mentioned your like your BetterHelp program, but anything else you want to plug, this is your time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you need help, Kids Eating Color, you can find me anywhere, TikTok, Instagram, you know, wherever you like to find people. I'm probably there in some way. But really what I always like to leave parents with is I truly believe you're doing a great job. Really, really believe that. And things may feel stressful and they may feel hard and you may feel like your kid is behind because they're not eating broccoli, whereas the kid down the street is. It's okay. Every kid is really on their own path to becoming a competent eater. And you're a parent on your path to helping your child wherever you are. You're like, every child is different. The things that work with my first kid most certainly did not work with my second kid, you know? And it took him 3.5 years to learn to like to eat tomatoes. So you just have to remember that you are doing a great job and feeding kids is really tricky. So if it feels that way, it doesn't mean that you're doing a bad job. It just means that feeding kids is tricky.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?